and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus he executed devotional service perfectly. Because of his devotion, he thought even the topmost planet of this material world no better than the hellish planets. Srila Prabhupada's purport. An exalted and pure devotee like Maharaj Ambarish is in full awareness of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. In other words, a devotee of Vasudeva, Krishna, is in full knowledge of the other features of the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth is realized in three features, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti shabdyate. A devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, knows everything. Vasudeva sarvam iti. Because Vasudeva, Krishna, includes both Paramatma and Brahman. One does not have to realize Paramatma by the yoga system, for the devotee, always thinking of Vasudeva, is the topmost yogi, yoginam api sarvesham. And as far as jnana is concerned, if one is a perfect devotee of Vasudeva, he is the greatest mahatma. Vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. A mahatma is one who has full knowledge of the Absolute Truth. Thus, Maharaj Ambarish, being a devotee of the Personality of Godhead, was in full awareness of Paramatma. Brahman, Maya, the material world, the spiritual world, and how things are going on everywhere. Everything was known to him. Yasmin vigyate sarvam evam vigyatam bhavati. Because the devotee knows Vasudeva, he knows everything within the creation of Vasudeva. Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. Such a devotee does not give much value to the highest standard of happiness within this material world. Narayana parasarve nakutaschena bibhyati swarga pavarga narakeshva pituyarta darshinaha. Bhagavatam 6:17-28. Because he is fixed in devotional service, a devotee does not regard any position in the material world as important. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati has therefore written Chaitanya Chandramata 5. Kaivalyam narakayate tridashapura akasha pushpayate dudantendriya kalasarpapatali protkata dangstrayate vishwampurna sukayate virimahindradishcha kitayate Yat karunya kataksha vaibhavatam tam gauram evastu maha. For one who becomes a pure devotee through devotional service to great personalities like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Kaivalya emerging into Brahman appears no better than hell. As far as the heavenly planets are concerned, to a devotee they are like a phantasmagoria or will-o'-the-wisp. And as far as yogic perfection is concerned, a devotee does not care a fig for such perfection, since the purpose of yogic perfection is achieved automatically by the devotee. This is all possible when one becomes a devotee of the Lord through the medium of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions. Om jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Ivam vidhaneka guna saraja paratmani brahmani vasudeve kriyakalapai samubaha bhaktim yaya virinchan nirayang chikara. In this way, because of devotional service, Maharaj Ambarish, who was endowed with varieties of transcendental qualities, was completely aware of Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus he executed devotional service perfectly. Because of his devotion, he thought even the topmost planet of this material world no better than the hellish planets. And Maharaj Ambarish, of course, he is not listed as a Mahajan, but he is, of course, a Mahajan, Mahatma, great soul. He's considered an example of someone who did everything, used all of his senses in the service of Krishna. Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo began by engaging his mind in the service of the Lord. And everything else he had, all of his senses, They were constantly engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is, of course, the very meaning of the word Bhagavatam means in relation to God, Bhagavan. And it includes a lot of information about the Lord's devotee, the Bhagavat, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So when we hear about the devotee, we want to know what is to be attained. Is there value in being a devotee? Should I be a devotee? What are the characteristics of a devotee, of Krishna? I was listening to a lecture yesterday, and Prabhupada was speaking on the Shukadeva Goswami's very first verse, when he first begins speaking, second canto, first verse of the second canto, Variyani Shite Krishna. So Shukadeva Goswami glorifies Maharaj Parikshit for his question. He says, oh, thank you for this question. Questions like this are glorious because they're for the welfare of the world. So what was his question? I was thinking back to what was the question. So Prabhupada doesn't say the question. What question did Maharaj Parikshit ask? So his question was, what is the duty of one who is about to die especially? And there was a duty of everyone. So when Prabhupada got to explaining what the question was, he said, Maharaj Parikshit's question was, should I live my life in Krishna consciousness? That's how Prabhupada paraphrased the question. So Prabhupada boils it all down. This is really the question. What am I supposed to do with my life? Should I be a devotee? So then, of course, the whole Bhagavatam is explaining, yes, you should. This is why. Of course, right in the beginning, Shukadeva Goswami says, yes, you should always hear about, glorify, worship, remember Krishna. Ante Narayana Smriti, this is one of the first verses he speaks. Whatever you do in life, you better remember Narayana at the end, because then you'll go to him. Otherwise, your destination is unsure. So throughout the Bhagavatam, we hear about these great devotees, and in the context of discussing them, we hear about their qualities and what it means. Here, guna, actually, we also have this here, vidhaneka guna. We hear about their qualities. But included in their qualities are such things, especially two things are mentioned here that we can see that are prominent in this purport. The first point is that the devotee knows everything. Yasmin vigyate sarvam evam vigyatam bhavati. And the other point, which is brought out later in the purport, is that the devotee, therefore, he doesn't care for anything else. Everything else is insignificant to him. This is basically Krishna says essentially something like this in the Bhagavad Gita, where he's talking about how the self-realized soul, when one becomes self-realized, and nothing can budge one from that. Yasmin vigyate sarvam Yasmin stita nadukena gurunapi vichalyate. Guru, the word guru appears in this verse as heavy. We know the word means heavy. Gurunapi vichalyate. Even if something heavy comes against to push the self-realized soul out of his position, he'll never budge because he's firmly fixed there. So the devotee of Krishna is firmly fixed in his realization. This is one of his qualities. So the first one here, the first point that is brought out is about Maharaj Ambarish's knowledge, how complete it was. Now this verse is one among very few in the Bhagavatam, as I understand it. I've heard this mentioned before from some learned devotee, that we don't see Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan specifically stated in shlokas. Now of course we have the famous one that Prabhupada quotes here, Vedanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yaj jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. But we have it again in this verse, Paramatmani, Brahmani, Vasudeve. We have Paramatma, Brahman, and Bhagavan mentioned in this verse. Now this is, of course, this is the revealed understanding of God. This is our conception of God. It includes these things, the absolute truth. The context of the verse that I quoted, Vedanti Tattva Vidas. This verse, by the way, is very important to Jiva Goswami, in writing his Sandarbhas. His whole Sandarbhas, the main hook of his Sandarbhas, it's all the bottom line, you can say, of the Sandarbhas is Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, that verse. he uses that as kind of the basis of all of his commentary and his sandarbhas. But he also speaks about this verse. This is a very important verse. Vadanti tattva vidha tattvam yajnanam advayam. What is tattva? Tattva means atma tattva, or the absolute truth. Because in the previous verse in the Bhagavatam, this verse, of course, is from the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, maybe the most power-packed chapter in the Bhagavatam, second chapter of the first canto. So there it says, kamasya nendriya pritir labo jiveta yavata. What is it? Jivasya tattva jigyasa narto yascheha kama. Kama bhi. You should desire to live, just to live, basically, jiveta. Just get what you need to live. Not just, don't live for sense gratification, but take what you need to live. But your business in life should be tattva jigyasa. Inquire into tattva. What is the truth? What is reality? So then in the very next verse, Sutta Goswami, who's speaking at this point, he says, this is what the absolute truth is. I'm going to tell you right now. Brahmeti paramat. He says, this is what the learned scholars say. Vadanti means it is spoken. Vadanti tattva vidas. Those who know tattva, the tattva vits, what do they say that tattva is? They say that it's made up of these three aspects. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. So this understanding, of course, is fundamental for us. It's very important. We link a lot of different things to it. Just like in this verse, when probably this is mentioned, these three categories of tattva, then naturally he mentions the yogis and the jnanis. So why is that? Because in our understanding, the yogis are after, as their ideal, what they think is the paragati, the highest goal. They think that it's just oneness. Everything is one. What are they after? Shanti. Shanti, shanti, shanti. They just want peace. They think that's all I want. This world is really a drag. I just want peace. Just give me peace. And there's something attractive about that. Even Prabhupada, there's one, he was speaking in the, Prayers by Queen Kunti, in that book, in that series of lectures, or the Kapiladeva lectures, where he says how this is desirable because with that comes the sense. Of course, we know that realization of Brahman realization, you understand eternity, that aspect of the absolute truth, the Brahman feature of God is where you get the sense of eternity, just that, basically, just that. But that in itself, if you understand that you're eternal, that gives you a lot of peace. Because our whole struggle for existence in this world is we think we're going to die. There was a famous book back in the 70s, I guess it was, called The Denial of Death. So it's all based on the psychology of how our motive for everything we do is really that we have this duality as human beings that animals don't have, where we have this sense of consciousness, which is a higher aspect, self-consciousness. We have this kind of sense that we're above animality, but then we have these animal bodies that are so grotesque and horrible, and the child starts to see these things early in life and reacts in different ways and so on. And this really drives a lot of the things that we do, our struggle in this world. So if you can overcome that, if you can become self-realized, realize I'm not this body, I'm eternal, I'm not going to die, then what great relief that is. How wonderful that is. So the jnanis are after that. So it's not a bad goal to pursue, but it's not enough. Shanti. So you're peaceful. Okay. I was thinking of this in relation to Krishna. One day I was looking out at the ocean, and it was very, very calm. And I was thinking, this is what the jnani wants. Calm seas. Only calm. So, but the jnani wants to just rest there on that calm. That's it. But I was thinking, well, that's not what Kshirodakshpachai Vishnu all it does. All of our Vishnus, they lie in the ocean, but what does the ocean do? It rocks them. They don't want calm. They want some motion. They want dynamics. So when you have oneness, you have no dynamics. You have only stop, basically. Everything stops when everything is calm. So that peacefulness means there's nothing more. But when you have Paramatma, then you have two. So as soon as you have two, two is automatically better than one. Just think of it conceptually, because you have more qualities. Automatically, when you have two, then you have more qualities, or you have more variety, you can say. You have relationship to start with. With one, there's no relationship. So you automatically have something added when you have two. So the absolute, our conception of the absolute truth, you can say it expands. So when there's Paramatma realization, in fact, when you have that realization, then it's, you become so awestruck you can't do anything. Prabhupada describes this in the Nectar of Devotion. This is Shanta Rasa. Now we sometimes speak of Shanta Rasa as maybe some of the material, quote, material things in the spiritual world, the ground and the trees and those kinds of things. But Shanta Rasa, in another conception, is when the yogi realizes Paramatma in the heart, he just becomes awestruck. God is so awesome that the yogi can't do anything, really. He's just stunned. This is one of the ecstasies of Shanta Rasa. Basically, you're just stunned and you can't do anything. But it is an increase. You can say there's more depth of... You're getting closer to the rasa of relationship with Bhagavan. That relationship is not really there. This is something I think about often. I was thinking about it this morning, about why is Paramatma in a separate category? Because Paramatma is Bhagavan Vishnu, and we have a picture of the Lord in the heart, so it's Lord Vishnu. So why is he not called Bhagavan? Why is he given a separate nomenclature, his own category, his own slice of the tattva, you might say? So one explanation for this is because that he plays, you might say, a sort of limited role. You know, I don't want to say anything about God as limited, but in one sense, he does. You don't have a real relationship with Paramatma in the sense that you have a relationship with Krishna, where it can develop and mature and becomes more and more intimate, where you get ananda. The ananda comes in relationship with Krishna. You realize sat, the sat feature of the absolute, through jnana, by Brahman realization. And you get knowledge when you connect with Paramatma. In this verse, Prabhupada, he quotes this, Yasmin vigyate sarvam evam vigyatam bhavati, that the devotee knows everything. So how does he know everything? Because he has that connection with Paramatma. The super soul is everywhere. What is that verse? Andantarastha paramanu chayantarastham. So the Paramatma is within everything. It's every single atom within the heart of every living entity. So he sees everything. It'd be nice to see everything. I was thinking the other day when I was flying somewhere and I was up in the air really high, and I was looking down at the ground, and I'm always curious, well, I wonder what it looks like when you're down there. But then sometimes when I'm on the ground, I'm thinking, gee, I wonder what it looks like when I'm up there, looking down here. So I want to have both perspectives. But God has all the perspective from all the angles, all the different places at the same time. So he can see everything. He's swarat, he's independent. He has knowledge of everything, everywhere. And the yogi who connects to Paramatma, or the devotee who connects with Krishna, therefore he knows everything. And then, what does Prabhupada say about that? He describes what that everything is. He kind of summarizes it. He's in full awareness of Paramatma. Well, when one is a devotee of... This was the point that Prabhupada is making, that when you have Bhagavan realization, then you have all these subordinate kinds of realizations too. So then he makes categories of them. You'll know Paramatma, you'll know Brahman, so those are the other two aspects of the Absolute Truth, but you'll also know Maya, the material world, the spiritual world, and how things are going on everywhere. So this, you might say, is a translation of this phrase that the devotee can know everything. He can know everything because he's connected to Paramatma, so Krishna can reveal anything to him. But he also knows everything because he knows how it works, how it's all connected. He knows the different aspects of reality, ontologically, you can say, what these things are in essence, different aspects of the world. And he knows how they are related to each other. And of course he knows ultimately that Krishna is in control of it all. So this is... very nice understanding that we have presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then in the second part of the purport, Prabhupada talks about, so what is the result when a devotee has this realization, when he knows Krishna? Then he quotes this wonderful verse by Prabodhananda Sarasvati, Kaivalyam Narakayate. So all these things that others are so much attracted to, working for, give their lives for the devotee, he doesn't care a fig for them, as Prabhupada would say. Kaivalyam Narakayate. In fact, he thinks Kaivalya is like hell. If Kaivalya means no Krishna, then I'd rather be in hell. I don't want to be there, a place where there's no Krishna. Tridashapura akasha pushpayate. Tridashapur means the heavenly planets. I'm not sure why it's called that. Tridasha means 30, I think. So anyway, we know there's 33 million. Actually, Prabhupada says 33 crores of demigods, which would be 330 million demigods. But anyway, Tridashapur means the heavenly planets. So what is that like? Which a lot of people want to go to. I've met people that their goal in life is to go to heaven, the heavens, you know, even Hindus who want to go to the heavenly planets. So what is that for a devotee? Akash Pushpa. It's like a flower in the sky. It doesn't exist. Or it could be like, just like when you look at cloud formation sometimes, you see all kinds of things. Wow, look at that. It looks just like a dog, or it looks like a flower. It might look like a flower. Look at it, perfect flower. What happens 5 minutes later? Where is it? It's gone. Will-o'-the-wisp, Prabhupada says. Like a will-o'-the-wisp, it's gone. So why should you be after that? You're going to be going out, then it's going to be gone. That's how material pleasure is anyway. Before you get there, it's gone. Or when you have it, then it dissolves in your hands. So a devotee has no attraction for that. And as for the yogis are struggling with their senses. And they're trying to get siddhis also, perfections. So the devotees have no interest in those things. They don't have to worry about engaging their senses because they're or controlling their senses because their senses are engaged in Krishna's service. So they're like it said that the senses are like the fangs of a serpent. But then now this serpent has broken teeth, got no teeth for the devotee. The serpents can't hurt. They're just like gums. They can't bite you. So the serpents are like, the senses are like that for the devotee. They're under control. They're not dangerous. In fact, they're favorable. So, and then it says, then Prabodhananda Saraswati says, Vishwam Purna Sukhayate. Actually, I have no problem in this world. It's Krishna's world. I'm here. I'm Krishna's devotee. We were hearing about Prahlad recently. He says the same thing. I'm swimming in an ocean of nectar because I'm always chanting your glories. So the devotee says, Vishwam Purna Sukhayate. I don't even have to worry about liberation. I'm not trying to get out of this place. I love it. It's fine. And he says that, but the position of Vidhi Mahendra, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they're so highly posted. But they're, as far as I'm concerned, they're like Kita. Like Kita is an insect. Kita janmahao yata tuva das. Bhaktivinoda says, let me be an insect in the house of your devotee. That's fine. As long as I'm your devotee, let me be an insect. So then the last line, you can say it sort of like answers a rhetorical question. Well, how are you able to think like this? So the last line basically says it, and Prabhupada quotes it here. Through devotional service to great personalities like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yat karunya kataksha vaibhavaptam tam goram eva stuma, because of gora, because of a karunya kataksha, which means a little drop of mercy from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's how I'm able to think this way and have this realization and reject everything that everybody else is desiring. So we have in Maharaj Ambarish, the perfect devotee, Prabhupada calls him that, and this is his realization. Also, it's coming forth in these pages of the Bhagavatam. So let me read this nice verse again. Evam vithani ka guna saraja paratmani brahmani vasudevi kriya kalapai samuvaha bhaktim yaya virinchan nirayang shikara. In this way, because of devotional service, Maharaj Ambarish, who was endowed with varieties of transcendental qualities, was completely aware of Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus he executed devotional service perfectly. Because of his devotion, he thought even the topmost planet of this material world no better than the hellish planets. Any questions? Tamaharapuru? Okay, Chaitanya-prabhu.
About heaven being Akash Pushpa. One time Indra told his guru Brihaspati, I'm going to build the biggest palace in the universe. Brihaspati said, just don't get so ambitious because you're not going to be here that long. See down there? See that Bhumi? Look, that Earth planet? Yes. See all the ants marching along? Yes. All former Indras.
Now, thank you for going to a nice class. I was, as you were discussing Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, thinking that, of course, Brahman is not spoken about much in the Srimad Bhagavatam, except sometimes in a negative way, as far as what the devotee rejects. But there is quite a bit of discussion of Paramatma in different chapters, in the third canto, and then, and of course, in the Lord in the Heart chapter. So, but we assume that while the devotee generally rejects Brahman realization, or not rejects it exactly, but is not very interested in that, would we say that the devotee does not necessarily reject Paramatma realization, although they understands that one goes beyond to Bhagavan realization?
Yeah. Now, I think we also, of course, we understand Paramatma is a more personal expansion of Krishna. And we even use interchangeably, we'll say, Krishna is in every atom. Govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. So Krishna is Paramatma. Now, one interesting thing is that when Jiva Goswami wrote the Sandarbhas, he wrote a Bhagavat Sandarbha and a Paramatma Sandarbha, but he didn't write a Brahman Sandarbha. And he actually talks about it. He says he didn't feel that he had to, because Brahman is included in his discussions of the other two. He didn't have to do a separate book all about Brahman, but he did about Paramatma. Because Paramatma, the other thing is just as understanding God, there's a lot to understand about Paramatma and what Paramatma does, because it's controlling everything in this world. It's intimately involved with everything that we see in this world and our understanding of how things work and so on. So it's a very active principle in our understanding of tattva, you know, atma tattva. Yes, Prabhu. Oh. Trivikam.
So it seems that it's through the via medium of Paramatma the Lord is able to know the hearts of all beings. Seems like that?
Yeah, well, Paramatma is the Lord, yes.
Yeah, you know, but I mean that
expansion.
He is
right there next to the soul.
that expansion is Paramatma. And also he helps all beings through that medium.
Yeah. Now, one thing we have to be careful of when we make distinctions between, like, Vishnu and Krishna and Paramatma and Krishna, expansion, something we think expansion is like something different. Well, it's not something or someone. It is Krishna. Paramatma is Krishna. And according to your love, your devotion, then you see Krishna is actually there. Shyamasundar is there for the devotees whose eyes are filled with love for Shyamasundar. They see that Paramatma, or we have that example in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that devotee who saw Nrsingadev there. So, Paramatma is these forms of Krishna also. They're all ones. So like Krishna can take off one disguise and put on, it's the same. He's the same person, whether he's in Vaikuntha or in the heart or wherever he is. So, yes, Krishna knows what's in our heart because he's there. He's everywhere. He knows ourselves better than we do. Yes, Premananda Gaur Prabhu. Oh, go ahead.
I was just wondering, you were saying in your lecture, and thank you very much for a very nice lecture, that the Gyanis, they're attracted to this shanti. You gave the example of an ocean that just... And I'm wondering, because even if they get that, even if they're allowed, I mean, we see in the material world these aspiring transcendentalists who will sit in one place for a period of time, but even after that they have to get up and go eat, or they want to do something. Our nature is to do something, so it seems like there's this disconnect in what they are desiring and then what they're what the reality really is, who they really are.
Of course, this point is covered in the Bhagavatam verse, prayers by the demigods to Lord Krishna in the womb. So one of the things they, this, I'm forgetting the line now. Patanti trona dipta yushmadangraya. Anyway, the verse ends with this line. And it says that even if those who get Brahman realization, they come down again. They have to come down and do. Now, Prabhupada, this is in the context of this verse, Prabhupada would always talk about how so many big jnanis or Brahman realized or Mayavadis, they're supposed to be Brahman realized, but then they come down and open hospitals. Apparently, this is a common thing in India. You're a big saint, a big sadhu, supposedly self-realized, and you're opening hospitals or you're feeding the poor. So Prabhupada uses this as an example. They're supposed to be Brahman realized, which means they're done with this world. They're supposed to have achieved shanti. Nothing moves them to do anything. But why are they moved to do something? Now our explanation is, because the jiva is an active principle. The jiva can't just sit still. Can't just be calm and float in nothingness. Because the jiva has a connection to course, what is that activity meant for? It's meant for Krishna. It's meant for rasa. It's meant for relationship with Krishna. So the jiva can't sit still. Basically, that's the purport. The jiva has to do something. Of course, that's a major theme of the Bhagavad Gita. You have to do something. So don't think you can just sit and meditate. You have to act in this world and connect that to Krishna, to connect that to me. So that activity has to be there. So in one sense, there's never full shanti until one comes to the natural position. Sanata jivatam. Praharsha yashyami sanata jivatam. Prabhupada quotes it, another nice prayer by Yamunacharya, I think it is. So at the end of the line it says, the devotee is praying, when will I have you as my master, sanata? Because then I'll feel secure. You can never feel secure, fully secure before that. This is discussed in the prayers by personified Vedas also. The question is raised, well, isn't Brahman real? Because Brahman rests on Krishna, isn't Brahman realization just as good? So the counter-arguments that the Acharya give is, no matter what you stand on the earth, you're never as stable as if you're standing on the earth itself. It's the most stable, the most substantial, the most secure. So we're never secure in Brahman realization or even Paramatma realization till we have, because we belong on the, with our feet on the ground, solidly on the ground in rasa, in relationship with Krishna. That's where full peace, satisfaction, and fulfillment comes only. Okay, we're starting to trip over. Paramananda Gaur has been waiting a long time, so let me take one more.
I wanted to just try to understand the difference between you know, the when you have like between the mind and what is Paramatma talking to you, like sometimes you say like oh, you know, I like this sixth sense, like, oh, Krishna was telling me this, but you know, I should have done that because like that, you know. So what,
well, as we become purified, we can know what's the voice of Krishna and what's the voice of something else. There's a joke that people say, when you talk to God, it's prayer. When he talks to you, it's schizophrenia. So, so yeah, mental illness. So you have to be careful what voices you're hearing. So according to us, you know, our basic guideline is we have sadhu, shastra, and guru. Whatever is being spoken to us from within, it has to confirm what we hear from sadhu, shastra, and guru. And of course, as we mature in Krishna consciousness, we hear Krishna's voice more clearly and understand more whether this is Krishna speaking or my own desires coming through. But as we're progressing as sadhakas, then we have to get confirmation from these other sources. All right, I think we should stop here, a little over time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.